This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 178. I'm Chris Stafford. And on the show this week, we're going to begin a brand new series we're calling Meet the Authors. And we begin with FEI four-star dressage judge Christoph Hess, who'll be joining me shortly to talk about his new book, Ride Better, and the accompanying DVD, Fine Riding. And after that, we'll be continuing our education series. It'll be part two of the prohibited substances in feed and supplements. That's all coming up later on in the program. But as always, we'd like to remind you that the views of the host and the guests of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. But first, we have a couple of news updates. The US Equestrian has announced that Laura Graves and Vidardis and Shelley Francis and Danilo will represent the USA at the FEI World Cup Finals, which take place in Paris from 11th to the 15th of April. And the Omaha Equestrian Foundation is offering wildcard opportunities for its $45,000 Dressage Team Challenge competition, which takes place at the International Omaha, also in the middle of April, from the 12th to the 15th. The team competition gives next-gen and amateurs, as well as seniors, youth and para riders in grade 3, 4 and 5, a chance to compete together. Each team must include three riders, one of whom is a youth rider. And the two best scores of their first technical test and the two best scores of the freestyle test will count. In total, four scores out of the six tests will count, with the youth rider scores breaking ties. Riders who may be interested in forming a team and applying for a wildcard berth should contact their dressage of director, Thomas Bauer, at acm.baur@t-online.de. That's Thomas Bauer at acm.baur@t-online.de. And now, to begin our new Meet the Author series, we begin with Christoph Hess, who is an FEI I judge in both dressage and eventing. The German National Federation awarded him the title of Professional Rider Instructor, a title that labels him as an international expert and educator of professionals. Christoph is currently holding the position of Head of Instruction and Head of the Personal Members Department at the GNF, where he's been employed since 1978. He's also actively involved in the education of judges and instructors both within Germany and around the world. He conducts clinics, workshops, forums, and symposiums for judges, trainers, and riders throughout the international dressage and eventing communities. He's also an examiner of judges and trainers at the highest level of dressage, including seminars and testing sanctioned and sponsored by the FEI. Christoph resides in Germany, but I caught up with him whilst he was in Florida recently for a seminar. Christoph, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Chris, thank you for the invitation to be part of your program.
Tell us a little bit about the background, why you decided to actually publish this book in the first place. Why did you decide to write it?
My decision was to do something for riders on all different levels, I would say from grassroots level till Olympic level or nearly Olympic level, in all three disciplines, mainly dressage, but show jumping a little bit, and cross-country, horse trials, eventing as well. What was the reason? I'm in Germany and abroad and very often in USA as well, giving seminars, clinics and other things. And I love to educate, I love to train, I love to coach horse and rider combinations. And I often have similar problems. And therefore, I had published this book first in Germany nearly 3 years ago, and or 2.5 years ago. And the title there is Better Riding. And then the second part is From Basic Work to Sensitive Riding. That is the original title in the German language. And when I give my clinics, I always have the feeling that all problems which riders have themselves or which riders have with their horses are basic problems. Example, when a horse is not good in a pirouette, for instance, which is a really difficult movement in walk and especially in canter, most of the time, the problem is not the period itself. The problem is the canter or the walk before, and the rider is not able to produce a proper walk and or a proper canter. And if he is not able to do this, no one in the world, no person in the world, no rider in the world is able to ride a proper period. This is the reason that I had done a lot of articles in the beginning in different magazines in Germany and was explaining all these things, how to come back to the basics if you have a problem on a higher level. And therefore, I had, I think, 40 or 50 different situations when I explain how to make a period better, how to make half passes better, how to ride proper transitions, how to ride better medium and extended trot, and this is the reason why I had published this book in the beginning in Germany and now in the USA.
So what you're offering here then, Christoph, is actually a series of solutions, really, to prepare for particular gates, to establish the correctness, of course, as always, it comes down to the basics then. So give us some examples of, you know, the kind of things that you often come across on your travels.
Yes. One example is he takes movement, half passes, lateral work, shoulder in, half passes. And what I see very often in the USA, but in other countries as well, the people always think, oh, what do I have to do lateral work? They think, okay, I have to flex my horse, I have to bend my horse, I have to ride on the line between A and B, for instance. And I say, no, that is not the main thing. The main thing is that you develop your gait. That means that you have enough impulsion before you start, that you have a clear rhythm, that you sit into the direction of the movement. And all these things I explain before I start to do lateral work. I look very, very careful to the question, is the horse in front of the rider's aids? Is the rider sitting in a proper way into the horse's movement, or is he sitting to the wrong side? Is the rider sensitive enough with his hands, or is he using too much the inside rein and starts to ride with the inside rein into the direction in which he wants to ride, for instance, his or her half pass? These basic things are, for me, the secret of good riding. And my philosophy is you never, ever will come to a higher level when you don't have your basics under control. Therefore, my book, Better Riding with Christoph Hess, is a book for everybody who wants to do things in the right way and who wants to look backwards, to bring all negative things, in the kindergarten and the primary school, in the correct line before to ask for more difficult movement.
And this is not just aimed at dressage, of course. This is also aimed at the jumper and the eventer.
Absolutely. Other example here, if you are not able to control the canter, if you are not able to ride a proper corner, you are not able to ride in a proper way. Therefore, you have to control the tempo of the horse. You have to have the feeling that as a show jumping rider, that you have the horse between your leg, your position, and your bit. So therefore, that's very important. When you don't have the horse in front of your driving aids, when you don't be able to ride bigger and smaller strides, when you don't be able to control the horse, you have no chance to ride in a good way a fence or many fences. This will never work. And this is what I explained there. Therefore, first flat work and then jumping. And I would say jumping is the perfection of dressage. And a similar situation I have with the cross country. I explain in a very, I hope, in a serious way how to school horses to jump ditches, to go down steps, then to jump into the water. How do you school a horse to do things like this? And this I explain, or what to do if you have a problem with your cross country horse. Because I had studied in my very old days pedagogics, I always try to give a systematic what to do to fix problems, and never ever fight with a horse. There is no reason to fight. Never ever punish a horse. Always think, what can I do that the horse will have as an opportunity to have a better understanding? Because riding is communication between the rider and the horse. And if a horse is doing things in the wrong way, then you have to ask yourself, what can I do to explain the horse better what I want that the horse has to do?
And this leads me to another question, Christoph, because you do emphasize the importance of having a content and, you know, a good partnership with the horse in a good frame of mind for whatever you're asking of him. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think, and this is the red line in my book as well, I look always from the horse's point of view. I don't look from the human's and from the rider's point of view. I look from the horse's point of view, and I always look from the horse's point of view and hear the nature of the horse. The horse is, first of all, is a flight animal, and the horse is a herd animal, and the horse is an animal which accepts a hierarchy. So I come from the last point, hierarchy. The horse accepts a rider, comma, if the rider is a good rider, if the rider is in balance, if the rider is able to have the horse in front of him, if the rider is supple, then the horse will accept the rider. The first thing is the rider has to be very well educated. He has to educate himself and to train himself every day to become a better rider, to be, from this point of view, a true partner of the horse and, the alpha. If they are partners, but the rider has to say, we go left or we go right or we canter or we trot or we jump. So that's the first thing, that the rider's finger has to go into his or her direction and not always to the horse's direction. That's the first thing. The second thing is the horse is a herd animal. That means when I have a young horse, I have to practice a lot of movements together with other horses. When a young horse, as an example, has to learn to go into the water as an eventing horse, then it's totally ridiculous and it makes no sense if you try it by yourself. No, ask another rider with an experienced horse that this horse will move first into the water and then your horse will follow him or her. This is maybe a good example. Or when you want to ride a horse around a new arena, then it's good to do it with another horse. Or when you go hacking cross-country, don't do it by yourself, do it with another horse, which has more experience than your young horse. Also, second thing is horse is a herd animal, and you have to use this situation. And the third thing is the horse is a flight animal. It means that the horse always has to have the feeling, I can run away. In the Piaf, when the horse is trotting on the spot, the horse has to have the feeling, I can run away. In halt, the horse has to have the feeling, I can move forward. Or the worst thing is what riders are doing when they use the reins and stop the horse. That is totally wrong, and that is 100% against the horse's nature. Therefore, you have always to ride with the feeling, I ride with my hands into the direction of the horse's mouth. I never use my reins in a backwards direction, because when I do this, then the horse's instinct starts and the horse starts to become nervous, and the horse then gets the feeling, oh, I have to run away, because in the situation when a horse has an uncomfortable feeling, horses run away. And because they are flight animals, the less you do with your hands, the less the horse will stimulate this negative situation, running away or do other stupid things. Therefore, you have to be, as a rider, very, very careful with your reins. And therefore, I never say ride a half halt or ride with your hands. I always say ride, for instance, when you are in canter, start to trot or start to walk, and you have to canter into the trot. You have to trot into the walk. I never say stop the trot or stop the canter or use your reins or ride half halts, because I always have the feeling that in this situation the riders do too much with their hands, and when they do something with their hands, they work against the nature of the horse, against the horse's flight instinct, and then negative situation starts.
And of course, everything that you do, you base on the classic principles of horsemanship and dressage, Christoph, and I'm sure you've come across so many common mistakes that people make. When you put a book together like this of the common questions and the answers, how did you select which of these topics that you would cover?
Okay, so to be honest, we have millions of things what we can do. I tried to have a mixture so that I hope everybody who will read this book will find something for his situation. I think if you have a lazy horse, I had written something about lazy horse. If you have a horse, I something about horses. I always tried to find very typical situations. And the system is that the rider asked me the question. I said, oh, Mr. Hess, I have a problem with my young horse. And then I tried to explain it. Always what you had just said, coming from a classic point of view, and the point of view is looking from the horse point of view. Therefore, natural horsemanship and classical training. And therefore, that's the spirit of the book. And this is the red line of the book.
And so finally, Christoph, what would be the message that you would like readers to take away from this book?
Yeah, my message is, and especially our generation now, as we do it, we now phone with an iPad and iPhone and with a computer. Our generation or our generations are very technical orientated. We look very much from this point of view. And therefore, we don't have so much feeling for animals and for the nature. And my wish is, and my motivation is, that I bring the readers back to look with a horse's eyes, that they get a feeling for an animal, because an animal is not a human with four legs. No, an animal has totally another is in another situation, born into another situation, and grown up in another situation. It's our responsibility to be very careful with the horse. And this is my philosophy, that I want to bring the reader into this direction, that they get a feeling for this. And this is the red line in all my different chapters. And then on this, when the readers are able to understand this, then I give advices what to do in detail. It's not a book full of philosophy in this direction. No, it's at the end of the day, it's a practical book, and you can read it. And I'm sure each person who reads the book will have at least 10 or 15 really special ideas what to do as a trainer, coach, instructor, riding teacher, or as a rider, which is the main reason why I'd written the book. It's not first written for trainers, mainly written for riders, and that they go home or in the stable, start riding the horse and have in mind what I had published. And I had got a lot of letters and emails from people who are reading my books, and they said, oh, it's lovely. I have exactly a similar problem with my horse, and now I tried to do, my horse is running away, and now I ride leg yielding, and now makes life much more easy. Or I ride not with my hands in the future, I ride now very, very careful with my inside leg, or other things, what I'm explaining. But therefore, I had a lot of feedback, and therefore I know that people use the book into this direction.
Well, it is a wonderful reference. There are lots of questions answered in Ride Better with Christoph Hess. Christoph, thank you very much for coming on the program and sharing this with us. Very nice to speak to you again, and good luck with the book.
Yeah, thank you very much indeed, and thank you for calling me, and I hope we'll meet again. We have met a couple of years ago, and now maybe it's time to meet again. And all the best for the readers of the book, and I hope they will learn a lot and they will enjoy reading, and then what's more important, that they will enjoy riding the horses with maybe the spirit of my book. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you so much, Christoph. And again, the title of that book is Ride Better with Christoph Hess. And for listeners of this podcast, there is a 20% discount on this title and all non-sale items at horseandriderbooks.com. please use the promo code USDFPOD. That's USDFPOD. The shipping is free within the US, and we will also post the discount code and the direct link in the show notes accompanying this episode. And we would like to thank Trafalgar Books, the US publishers of this title, who are working with us to select and schedule the authors for this series. We'll be talking to many more authors in upcoming episodes of this podcast. And now, in our education series, we have part two of the prohibited substances in feed and supplements that was presented originally by Eileen Fethin and recorded during the education sessions at the 2017 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
I think that so many things happen in our world because people mean well, but there's so much information out there, we can't possibly know it all. And you kind of pick and choose, and people do things with the best intentions and just don't understand. It's chemical compounds that are banned or prohibited. The FBI is involved, the Olympic Committee and organizer for that games is involved. And one of the things we have to do after, you know, say yes, we'll procure all of these things that they're going to want, and we will liaise with all of the teams and all of that. But we have to coordinate testing of manufacturer feeds for prohibited substances by an FBI-approved laboratory. But when we go to the FBI and say, so what should we test for? They go, well, I don't know, it just better not have any prohibited substances in it. We actually use this laboratory in Europe that is an FBI drug laboratory, and we have to make sure that anything that we supply at the games has been tested for, well, any of the mixed feeds have been tested for prohibited substances. And in Rio, we actually had two sets of feeds made by two separate manufacturers because it came down to the wire on time. And so what we ended up doing is have two separate sets of feeds sent because we had express mailed them to the laboratory, and by the time we got the results back, we wouldn't have had enough time to produce a different batch of feeds. So we basically bet on the fact that one or the other of them had to be clear of prohibited substances. So that just added to our cost. I think really we can point out that prohibited substances are a major issue for sport horses and race horses. Sometimes they're given to cheat, but I think still the most of our positives are coming from accidental, either improper withdrawal times. You thought that, you know, a day was enough and it should have been 7 days or 3 days after the last dose of whatever. Accidental contamination with NOPs, livestock medications, human foods or medications. The only thing I can leave you guys with is just the thought process of use care in your competition horses. They're stabling. Medicated horses can contaminate their environments, stalls and pastures, and transfer things to new tenants. I'll tell you another story. We did a research trial at KER, and part of that protocol was giving omeprazole or Dastrogard to the horses. And they weren't on a digestibility period, so they were stabled on shavings. Now, we compost our shavings, and then we spread it on our pasture. So we keep a herd of horses as well that are not medicated with anything that we can pull clean blood and urine samples to provide to the testing laboratory. We also use those horses to test so our products. We make additives for horse feed as well as special needs supplements. So we also feed those horses those, and then their blood and urine tested, and if anything shows up, we can pull it. So that's our in vivo quality control. Well, we had positives show up in these clean horses that were out on pasture, not given anything, for omeprazole. I mean, we've got a 150-acre farm. The drug testing herd is at the back. The guys that were on the research trial are up in front. What the heck? Manure that was from the horses that were on the omeprazole was composted and spread on the fields that the other horses were grazing. We got an omeprazole positive. I mean, who the heck would think of that? I will say dedicate clean buckets for serving and consuming feed and water for your competition horses. We all have have, I don't know about you all, but I have that pile of those like 3.5 gallon buckets that everybody's feet get scooped into and then carried out and dumped in the stall. Every horse doesn't get the same bucket every time, and some of them get medications and supplements and some of them don't. Well, that means your buckets are all contaminated and dirty with, you know, and it could have been weeks ago that you gave somebody something that shouldn't be in that FEI horse. So for $5, maybe a clean bucket to go to the show with could be a good investment. Or you keep a set of buckets that are clean and they get kept that way and away from anything else. But you can certainly see how transfer could occur if you swap sheets, saddle pads, and wraps between horses. You know, I used a poultice or an ointment on this one and then used the same one. Well, they're not that dirty. Do I really need to wash them? I can put them on this horse now. Or, you know, basically just scrutinize everything that's going in. Store things responsibly and thoughtfully. Educate everybody that works for you, that has a role in feeding, medicating, grooming, whatever, as to the risks and how to handle things so that they minimize those risks. Okay, if you're at home schooling, do whatever the heck you want that keeps your horses healthy, happy, sound, and you safe. But know when you need to change that before you go to a show where you're competing under rules. The USCF Drugs and Medications Guidelines actually has a page for withdrawal times. And they also put that, a grain of salt in with that, saying, you know, these are our guidelines and your horse could be different. We've also done some work, and I mean, I can't tell you the results, but we've worked with that drug laboratory to help them better understand if a certain amount is given and titrated different doses, how long it takes to get out of the horse's system so that they can give better advice to the regulating authorities as to withdrawal times on different things. The FEI has a clean sport database. They also have an app for your phone, so you can look up things.
And our thanks again to Eileen Fathian for that presentation. And finally, I have a reminder for you that USDF members are entitled to discounts through USDF's Member Perks Partners Program. You can log in to the USDF website to access the discount codes and start saving today. And if any of you are artists and would like to share your artwork with the dressage world, a reminder of the annual USDF Arts Contest that highlights the artistic talents of our members in both art and photography divisions with different age categories for each. The winners will have their work published in the yearbook issue of USDF Connection magazine, with the grand prize winner used as the cover of the USDF member guide. And you can find more information about this award by visiting our website at usdf.org/awards. And that's our show for this week. Don't forget that if you are listening on the website, you can also download it through your podcast app, your podcast player, that is, on your mobile device, so you can take the show with you and listen anywhere. And don't forget to keep up with the latest episodes by following us on social media at USDF. I'll be back in 2 weeks' time for another episode of the USDF's official podcast. Until then, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.